I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women. Hello.
Hello.
We have a secret to share that I don't think a lot of people know.
Do we?
Yeah. We are neurodivergent.
No.
Yeah. You're surprised too. You also don't know.
I wasn't expecting that. This is shocking news to me.
I know. I felt it's a good time to throw it out in the world. Admit that.
Yeah. Okay.
I was preparing this bit for an entire morning. I'm quite excited.
I could tell
it.
You jumped right in.
I know.
I didn't know where it was going.
Right. And that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Why not? How it impacts everything.
Yes.
But as well, how it impacts writing and reading and all the good stuff and consuming media.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important to us, and we don't just talk about media here, we talk about everything. So today, against your will, you will learn about our scary little brains.
Exactly.
But first, shall we have a catch up?
Let's do it.
What have you been reading?
I'm going to say it right. I've been reading Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail.
Yay. She said it right.
I said it right. I kept calling it Astrid Park. I don't know why.
She dropped a syllable. It's fine.
I either add stuff or I drop them. There's nothing.
Yeah. But we always know what you're talking about.
And by we, you mean you.
Yeah. I personally do. I'm on the same brain wave. And he also said brain length.
Isn't that the same thing?
No, it's wavelength or brain wave.
Okay. Well, anyway. Yes, I've been reading that. I finished it. It was so good. It was so good. I'm not ashamed to admit that I've been skipping through, like, the furniture talk and the I didn't understand most of the words. So, like, I was reading it, but my brain wasn't.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's why I've been putting it off as well. Because I really liked Delilah Green by Ashley Herring-Blake, by the way, we're talking about. But I don't care about houses.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big-ass house on the cover of Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail. And there is a delightful short-haired woman there also.
Yes.
But I don't want to read about carpets and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they mentioned one carpet, so you're good.
Okay. I was going to say that also could be seen as a euphemism, in which case I guess we could get behind the carpets.
Oh, yeah. Then yes, they were talking about that.
Yeah. I just unlocked something I wish I could put back. But yeah,
it is.
That's why I've been putting it off as well. But
yeah,
I guess I'll just do the same thing you did and skip through some.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I just was skipping through those descriptions. Like, overall, I don't necessarily adore descriptions that much. Like, I don't need them. So sometimes my brain is not braining.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah, I get it. We're not the type of lesbians / sapphics who enjoy interior design.
Yeah, no.
No architecture.
No.
We skipped that gene.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Iris Kelly comes out next month, so I do need to get on that.
I'm really excited for that one also.
Yeah. The covers are just so pretty.
Yes.
I think, like, they're the most character-filled covers that I've seen, because, like, you can really see their personality on every cover, and they're all different. Like, yes, they're all white ladies, but they're all different white ladies, and it's great. I like that.
And they're also very differently queer.
Yeah, they are. They They all have such a different story. That's one thing that I really liked about Ashley, Harry and Blake. We've talked about that before, how like diversity isn't just the usual things we go to, like queerness and ethnicity and stuff like that. There's a lot of different stories in there.
Yeah, and I was also listening to audiobooks. We Eat You Up has a new book coming out also next month, I feel like, or in November. And it's from A Darker Shade of Magic World. So I finished the first book on audiobook. I'm listening to the second one right now. And I just, Delilah Bard, she has my heart. My favorite tea. I cannot never say it. Thief.
Oh, thief.
It's the worst word.
Yeah, I didn't get what you was trying to say.
I hate it.
It was like teeth.
Yeah, I hate it so much. Anyway, yes. hate it. And I've also read Blackheart Ghosts by Laurie.
And yeah.
The second book after Blackheart Nights. It is fantasy / I don't know what. It's not like fantasy. There's a little bit of sort of like arcane Fortnite fantasy vibe. And it's really queer. There's so many queer characters. There is so many non-binary people. Yeah. Everybody's gay. I love it.
Yeah.
And it broke my heart a little bit. Yes.
Beautiful.
What else? Oh, I read. This is, I feel like, very literature that teaches me a lot. And it's Barbarian Lover by Ruby Dixon. I don't know if I talked about it last week. It wasn't. I read it last weekend, so I didn't.
No.
No. Yeah, I think it's very educational. I feel like we all should get ready.
Yeah.
And that's real. That's, yeah, I'm right.
I agree. Absolutely.
It was really fun. And I also started reading Eyes, Guts, Throat, Bones by Moira Fawley Doyle. It's a collection of short stories. Every one of them sapphic, I feel like. It's really good. It's interesting. I don't understand sometimes what's going on, but I'm enjoying it.
It's horror, isn't it?
Kinda, yes.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like magical horror.
Yeah. Okay. Exciting.
Yeah, it's really nicely written. It's very magical and sapphic. Yeah. And that's what you really need in life.
I didn't know it was sapphic, actually. I'm very shallow and I picked this book purely for the cover.
I understand.
I haven't read it yet. Well, I don't have it yet.
I was about to ask you. I was like, no. I don't know. Yeah.
It's on my wish list.
Yeah. So that's fun.
Yeah.
That's it. So what about you?
I've read quite a few recently. I read Happiness for Beginners by Catherine Senter because, as I talked about in the last episode, something overcame me when I watched this very cheesy Netflix rom-com adaptation and I fell in love with Luke Grimes. And so I thought I would buy the book just to see if I can squeeze any more like little content out of there. But it was the same most of the way through. What was different was that there was a 10-year age gap still, which is delightful because the woman is older. But they met when he was 16, and in the romance portion of the book, he's 22 and she's 32. So I just feel like there wasn't enough time from when he was a little baby to like when he was a full-grown adult. I tried to bat that away because, like, even I'm 20, just about to turn 26, and I don't think I could touch a 22-year-old boy. I just think they should have been a little bit older. If I wouldn't have known, I would have thought she wrote the book based on the film, because like there was nothing extra there. You know how like usually when you read a a book that's been adapted, there's a lot more content in the book that you kind of wish you saw on screen. It wasn't like that. It was a pretty, like, easy, simple, uncomplicated read. Nothing bad, nothing good, just fine.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I read A Dowry of Blood by S.T. Gibson on Ivy's command. And it was great. It was really, like, gothic-y. It's a, like, it's surrounding Dracula, but it's from his wife's point of view, and like the way his abusiveness becomes more prominent through the years and how eventually it leads to an incident that changes them forever without spoilers. And it's really good. Like the way that she wrote those snippets of abusiveness where like it could easily be swept under the rug, but you just know it's like really problematic and dangerous. So good. Just really good.
I have
the writing is like
one of the best books I've
gorgeous.
Ever read. Like,
yeah,
so fun.
And it's written in second person, like she's writing these entries to him, but like it's not about, it's like female rage and like a feminist slant, because it's not about like how she adores him. Well, it is, but it's also about like how she began to see through how she worshipped him. And on the way, there's queerness, like polyamory. I actually really liked, I've never read polyamory, and I really liked the thruple at the end. Like, they're so fucking sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And that just made me happy. And it, yeah, there's sapphicness in it and queerness and just the normalization of queer vampires, which, of course, like, if you're immortal, you're gonna fuck everybody. That's the rule.
It's the norm, actually.
It's the norm. Like, imagine being subjected to immortality and only fucking white men. Ugh, no, thank you.
Yeah.
And also, like, because he gets a new wife and a husband over time, and the difference between those eras that he takes them from, like Constanza is the first, way back in like, what is it, like 1300s, and then he gets like a more Regency era woman who's a little more independent but still kind of easily like done over by his charms, and then we get like a liberal in the 1920s, I want to say 1910s, 1920s, and that's like the turning point. Like, just how she showed the transition of eras through those characters is so good. Mm-hmm. It's so clever. Yeah, there's a lot to say about that book, and I really liked it. And it's a great read for like the coming spooky season, because it is super like gothic and dark and bloody, but also really prosaic and beautiful. And then yesterday I read Galati by Madeline Miller, which is only 56 pages, I think. It's a short story with a new take on Galati. I'd never heard of the myth before, but I read like the author's notes at the end and found out that like My Fair Lady is based on it, and it's about like a man who doesn't like prostitution and stuff, so he makes a woman out of marble and just like his own woman for him, and like how it's always been romanticized, but she wrote a really like feminist slant on it again. I'm being very feminist and slanty recently, and I love that for me. And yeah, it was pretty good. It was good. I actually liked it more than Cersei. I feel like Cersei took its sweet, sweet time, and there's not always a lot of like emotion in Miller's writing. Like, there was quite a lot in Achilles, because there was more romance in that. But I always find it a bit hard to get into the person's head. But I think this time it was a good thing, because like she was made of stone, and she kept referring to how like she's all her behaviors and feelings have been learned. It was pretty good, and it's a quick read, so I would recommend it. And also the hardback is really pretty and small. It made me feel like a giant. Very small in my hands. And then I read How to Fell a Foe by Rebecca Crundon, which is the third book in the Enlil and Aris series, which is, it's a Killian romance, and there's witches and magic and plants and animals. And this one was the best one yet, because there was a villain there who actually turned out to not be a villain. As usual, he was just a sad, lonely little boy who needed some help. And it gave me all the angst, because the other two were very cozy and quick. Well, this one was quick and cozy as well, but it also had that like sprinkle that I love. Sprinkle of angst and feeling, and they have really good romance going, and I'm just very excited. And also I designed the covers, but I'm not biased. It's still a really good book. Yeah. And I'm currently reading Hot Shot on audiobook by Claire Lydon. I've not got long left of that, like 2 hours maybe. And it's very like slow burn. Yeah, just an easy listen to when I'm walking the dog. Not much to say about it. And then I started Final Offer by Lauren Asher, because I still haven't learned my lesson about these white men and these heterosexual romances. But it's really good. I've been waiting for this one because I love an alcoholic. Respectfully, I love a messy man, and this one is an alcoholic and an addict, and she has a kid who's not really her kid, and it's just I just know I'm gonna get some good angst from this one. Yeah. And it's slightly different from her other ones because it's set in a small town.
The next series she's doing is from this small town, I think. So it's still a billionaire romance.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
But they're from this place. And I'm very...
Because we all know, we always find billionaires in rundown towns for elderly people. That's where all the billionaires are.
Why would you ruin it with logic and reality? Stop it. Stop it.
Well, it is what it is. I'm just saying, I've never met a billionaire in any small rundown towns around these parts, but that's fine. I'm not sure I'd want to. So that's where I'm at with reading. What are you watching?
Grace. Yeah. I'm back. She's back. It is what it is. I'm on season 3 or 4? 4. I think so. I have Lexi, and it's everything to me. She just hooked up with Alex. I was happy not to remember that.
Yeah. I think I'm about 7, 8 episodes in. Arizona has a new love interest, and I don't like it. What else are you watching?
Not much. Well, I keep getting new episodes of Only Murders in the Building, Miracle Workers, and What We Do in the Shadows, and Harley Quinn. That's coming out weekly, so I'm watching that. And last night we watched a movie.
We did. We watched
Dungeons and Dragons. Yes. Now I have an issue not calling it Dungeons and Daddies, because I said this more than the actual Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. And there are a lot of daddies in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
It was great.
I love the movie so much. I cannot stress it enough. I talked about it before, I'm sure, but it's just such a... It is, in a way, cozy fantasy.
Yeah.
And because they didn't rely on CGI only, they did a lot of special effects, a lot of makeup, and especially with the costumes, like Jonathan was a whole ass costume. It gives you that sort of actual fantasy feels. It's so good.
Yeah. It was needed. We need more. We need more fantasy and like comedy and just like joyfulness as well.
Yeah.
I love a good quest. The most unrealistic part of this world of dragons and stuff was that Holger fancied small white men. That woman was as butch as they come. She needed a wife. She didn't need a man.
I agree.
But yeah, it was, and it had some nice found family in there.
Yeah.
It did really well.
And most importantly, it had Regé Jean Page.
Yeah.
And what more do you really need?
He's so good. He's great in that. I understand now why he like made the decision to take a step back from Bridgerton, because he needs to be known as like the good actor that he is and the eclectic actor that he is as well.
I want him in comedies more, because he was absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And so small as the other guy whose name I always
Justice
forget.
Smith, I think.
Justice Smith. I'd only seen him in dark stuff, like the one with...
I love how there are two types of people. You've seen him only in dark stuff, and I saw him first in Jurassic World and Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, I just straight up didn't know that he was even like a good actor, because I watched him in All the Bright Places, where he was just a suicidal boy, and we watched that film with Sebastian Stan where he was conned the whole way through.
Yeah.
So I was very surprised. And also with his British accent, I thought he was really British, because his British accent was pretty good.
Yeah.
Just a wild, wild thing. You learn something new every day.
That's true.
And also, I never really liked Michelle Rodriguez, and I don't know why, because I only ever watched her in Lost, but her character in that annoyed me. So I was prepared to not like her. But instead, I fell very much in love with her, because she was a woman wielding a sword with muscles and leather.
It's
weird
because I'm watching... I've seen it before, for the first time, before I've seen the horrible interviews she's done for Fast and Furious. Mm. And now that was in my brain when I was watching it last night. Yeah. Like, it was insane a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. How could you, after doing a movie like that, how could you then hype up Fast and Furious like that's the best movie ever? After you've done a movie like Dungeons and Dragons, which is far superior.
I'm telling you, they must have brainwashed them, because it was the entire cast. There's no logical explanation.
So whoever runs Fast and Furious must be a cult leader.
Mm-hmm.
The only explanation.
Vin Diesel.
Oh, does he run it? Does he,
well,
like...
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, like, but he's sort of that, yeah.
He has the potential.
Yeah.
And we've been watching Heartstopper as well.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is just overall very, very lovely. Mm. And it always makes me so warm and fuzzy to think of all the teenagers who get to watch it. Like, all the queer teenagers who just get it. Like, they don't have to fight for it. It's there on Netflix.
My cousin read it several times. She watched it. I don't think she's straight.
No.
But I was thinking about, like, it makes me so happy that she gets to have that.
Yeah. And she can just watch it and be like, hey, maybe I'm like one of those characters.
And especially, like, with the language, the labels, the really, like, focus on not pressuring yourself to come out to people. You don't owe that to anyone but yourself only. Yeah. Like, all of that. And it made me very soft.
It's so great. And just the way that even the secondary characters are queer, like the teachers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like, and Elle just met some new friends on her way to art school. And it's just, oh, it just makes me so warm. Like, it represents society for what it is now, because straight people think that everybody's straight, but queer people really like attract other queer people, and that's our world.
Yeah.
Or it would be if I left the house.
Like, we're not even in the same country and we still attracted each other, so what the fuck are
I know about? And we have a whole Discord server of queer people like us, and it's great.
It really is.
And it's funny because my best friend and I, like, we always thought we were straight. And then she came out as bi, and then I realized I was pan, and it's like, even before we knew we were queer, we were attracting each other. Like, it's crazy how it works, but it's great. It's a really great show, and I'm so happy. I just wish we could have a sapphic version as well. Like, League of Their Own was just cancelled, and that was, like, such a popular show in the community. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's always the sapphic shows that seem to suffer.
Yeah.
Shit. What have I been watching? Yellowstone still. It's really good. Beth Dutton. I fucking love her. She's a bully. I don't give a shit. I want her to be mean all the time. She's so awful and horrible, and I love her. I went back to The Walking Dead. There was some man with a lion there. Did we talk about that last week? I don't know. I think possibly we did.
We keep saying last week, but it was 2 weeks ago.
It was it was actually more like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've watched a bit of The Office.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing interesting to say about any of these things.
What? Everything there is to say about The Office is interesting thing to say.
Yeah, but I don't have anything of note to say. It was just funny.
Yeah, okay.
Aha, is what I say.
Okay.
Oh, my friend and I watched That's Amor on Netflix. Let me say it Spanishly. That's Amor. No, that wasn't Spanish. I don't know how to say it without sounding like a twat. We watched That's Amor. And that was really sweet. Netflix are doing pretty okay with the cute little rom-coms. Like, they're nothing special, but if you enjoy a Hallmark movie, you'll enjoy these ones. There was a hot Spanish man there, so.
Beautiful.
What about games? What have you been playing? Talk about games.
So, first of all, I've been playing Unpacking, which it's surprisingly queer. You go through with this girlie throughout her life and you unpack her rooms, like her first room, then her college dorm, when she moves in with her friends and stuff like that. And it was so fun. It's very cozy. It's very to turn off your brain. I was listening to audiobooks the entire time. It's very satisfying. It's very fun. I cannot recommend it enough. On Nintendo Store, it's quite often on sale.
Yeah.
Spiritfarer, of course, still. I've been trying to finish that. I have 10% of quests left. I have the option to end the game, but I want to end it with 100%. So,
yeah.
Even though, like, I don't... Oh, because I know I'm so close to the end, I'm not enjoying it. I'm not doing much stuff because there's no reason for it. But yeah. And most importantly, what I've been playing is Baldur's Gate. Because the third one came out recently, of course. I'm so excited to get it at some point in my life. But on Nintendo Store, there is the first and second Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition bundle. And I had it on my wishlist for a while and was like, once I get paid, it's quite expensive, but I'm going to get it. And it was on sale now. Like, they just felt me. And I had to use my Nintendo points because they were about to expire. So I had to get it now. Yeah. I gotta do what I gotta do, right?
You do. Absolutely.
So I've been playing that. And it makes me very happy. And I'm in my Dungeons and Dragons era. I was about to say daddies again.
Anyway. Well, I like it. Because I was looking at the graphics and they didn't really appeal to me.
Yeah.
I will. Yeah, I will like it.
I mean, the graphics is not the best. It's very like... Look, if we're used to the Fortnite graphics, that's the issue.
Yeah,
like, that's the first big game we started with. So we are a little picky. I feel it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Baldur's Gate has that very, like, old vibey RPG graphics.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it. I'm enjoying it. Like, it's very on point with the vibes. Yeah.
And the game is fun.
Huh?
And the game is fun.
Yeah. I think I'm already romancing a character.
Ooh.
And it's very fun to see like how they were doing it because the first game came out in 1994, I think, so or 8. So it's fun to see how like it was done then and how it's done now when they use motion capture and you know they you have like really nicely well done scenes.
Yeah.
So I'm just really excited. I'm excited to get the third one because Asterion.
Yeah.
I'm a slut for damaged men.
Yeah.
Who are toxic. And I think there is a storyline in which you can like help him become the vampire lord. Yeah. So I'm very excited to get to the third one. But it's not on Nintendo. It's not on PlayStation. And if I'm going to have to buy like gaming laptop for Asterion, I shall.
Beautiful.
The new season of Fortnite came out also.
It did, yeah. I was a bit underwhelmed because, like, I saw leaks that the whole one side of the island of the map was going to be lunar and moonish, and I was like imagining walking on the moon and stuff, and I was getting very excited. But it's mostly just another heist thing, which is fun. I love doing the little heists, but all the locations are just the same. They're just the same, like, high security fancy mansions. And I always like something, I like a nice landscape, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I don't mind it. I'm excited. The guns are fun.
Yeah, they are.
And I love pretending to be a spy.
Yeah.
And I also, the entire battle pass is just filled with queer skins. Like, oh, yeah. I'm slut for every one of them, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's fine. I've preferred better seasons. Especially with, like, Halloween coming up. I was hoping for something a little bit autumnal. But it is what it is.
The new chapter, I feel like, starts in November, so.
Yeah.
And what have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing Spiritfarer. Mm-hmm. It's taken over my life. I'm kind of where you're at. Yeah. I'm where you're at with it. I'm like 70% in, and there's not many more spirits for me to get. And I miss my old pals because they all went to the Everdoors.
I miss Emperor the Toad and Stanley. He was my favorite.
Yeah, Stanley was a cutie patootie. I don't think I have many more places on the map to discover either, and that was my favorite part. And I'm kind of sick of watering my plants. It's such a great game, but it's kind of like falling off towards the end. I don't know.
Yeah, that's my issue. But for the gardens and stuff, I found blueprints where I don't have to water it often.
Oh, yes. Because I upgraded my fields and stuff, and now they need even more. It's like they're trying to annoy me. Because they grow quicker, so they need watering quicker. But yeah, it's good. It's good fun. It's just nice. It's good graphics. It's just really good. I got really obsessed with it.
Very cute. Very cozy. Very vibey.
Yeah. And I went back to Skyrim yesterday for the first time in ages. Riding my little horse around. My favorite thing to do. Love riding my horse. I always accidentally kill them, though, because I try to go up the mountains, and then when I come down, they die. They fall and die to their death. I've noticed, like, for a while there, I was really coasting through it because I got good at everything, but then the update happened, and now I'm stuck again. Yeah, but yeah, it's good. I honestly, Skyrim, like, I just long to be there sometimes, and I have to play it. Because it's just a certain vibe that I can't find anywhere else. It's so good. Yeah. That's really it, I think.
Wonderful.
First of all, let's talk about, like, how we came to figure out we were neurodivergent and what that means to us.
The question is how we didn't figure it out for so long. And the answer is easy. We even didn't know what it really is.
No, and neither did our family, who very clearly passed it on to us. Like, I live in a very autistic household, and yet nobody put the dots together. Nobody knew what autism was or what it really means.
I'm ADHD girly.
Yeah.
Last week I was talking to my mom, and I was talking about, like, dates and deadlines and for work and stuff like that. I was like, if the thing doesn't have a deadline, it does not exist for me, and I cannot get into it. And she was like, oh my god, I have that too, you know, you must have got it from me. And I'm like, oh, yeah,
must not have. All she got it from you, mother.
It was really funny to me.
Yeah, it's wild. That's the thing, I think, like, with the it, you forget how new it still is to them.
Mm-hmm.
And how new it still is in general. Like, I grew up thinking autism was, like, I think I only ever saw it in one movie with Bruce Willis, and he was, like, severely autistic and was often, like, nonverbal and like, bang his head against the wall. And so when that's the only representation that you see, where, like, it's so severe, you don't realise that it could remotely be similar to you, because especially as women, that's not how it presents in us.
My brother, when we were kids, he was tested for ADHD because he was hyperactive. Yeah. So it's interesting to see, like, of course he had ADHD, but not, of course, me when I had all
And the big part of that is because boys are allowed to do to act on their, like, impulses and however they feel like acting. If they're angry, they get to be angry. If, like, they're giddy, they get to be giddy. If they don't want to do something, they get to throw a tantrum and say no. But with women, you're expected to be sensible and, like, emotionally adept at a young age. Mm-hmm. And, like, I must have been masking for so many things. But, like, I don't know. It's weird. And a lot of the forms, because I tried to get a diagnosis for ADHD first, and they're like, you have to go back to childhood. And I don't remember a lot of my childhood. I don't remember how I was. I remember feeling uncomfortable all the time with everything. But, like, I don't remember the reasons why, because if you don't know something's wrong, you're not paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's really difficult.
Yeah. And in the past 2 years, it's been a big discussion when it comes to, like, neurodivergent people, again, the language, the names for it, especially on TikTok. Then we did a little research.
We did.
And we were like, hey, that's us. And here we are.
Yeah, we're not, like, formally diagnosed, but, like, it's fair to say, like, we're very much self-diagnosed, and I don't think it's an opinion anymore. Like, I felt like an imposter for a really long time for even thinking I might be, and then people were like, neurotypical people don't wonder if they're autistic, and I'm like, oh.
It really is such a, like, big brain moment when you're like, oh yeah, okay, it's me. Like, it settles inside of you. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, so I have ADHD, and now everything in my past made so much sense.
Yeah.
And everything I struggled with, especially, like, with my mom, that was also, like, most of the subject of our fights, and, like, my being lazy constantly and being late and all these little stuff, makes so much more sense. And it made me, like, just let out a long breath, like, okay,
mm-hmm.
I know what's going on.
Yeah, for me it was, I got to, like, a point where it's like everything is so hard all the fucking time, and, like, I'd been diagnosed with anxiety and depression, and I was on sertraline, I still am, and, like, I barely scraped through all of, like, I think it really, like, accumulated when I started exams and stuff, and, like, it just got worse every year. Like, I got to uni and moved away, and I was crying on moving in day, and I was like, nobody else is crying on moving in day, and, like, I nearly didn't go to one of my exams, like, and then, like, I thought life would be easier when I finished, like, schooling. But then I'm working from home and my life is fine, and I don't have any responsibility to, like, leave the house or do anything mega, like, tough. And I was still, like, I just felt ill. Like, and a lot of it is mental illness as well. But I was like, why don't I, like, have any support? And it just accumulated. And I was like, something's not wrong. Like, it's like the wires aren't connecting in my brain properly. And that's when I, like, tried to get an ADHD diagnosis, because I was like, my brain never shuts up. It's, like, on a motor all the time, and it's exhausting, and I always feel like I should be doing something or being somewhere, and I feel guilty about it all the time. And it's, and, but, like, the health system is so fucking shit that I've just given up on even trying to get a diagnosis, because they're not going to help me anyways. I know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's kind of, and then after that, that's when I started seeing autism stuff, and I was like, oh, it's not just ADHD. And I kind of knew it was, because a lot of stuff for ADHD applied to me, but there was so much more that wasn't there,
mm-hmm.
on, like, the self-referral sheets and stuff. I think you started sending me a lot of stuff as well about being autistic, and I was like, okay. But it's like, even now I still doubt it. And I've taken like the tests and stuff online and it got really high scores. And it like, but even now I'm still like, no, it's just in your head. Like, it's crazy. It's really quite a strange thing. And your life does end up revolving around it a little bit. What about you? Do you plan to get a diagnosis or just stick with it?
I do want it, just so it's I know it's like real.
Yeah.
But it's a little more difficult here because our like therapists are not paid by the health insurance. And especially for a diagnosis, you cannot go to a therapist. You need the one above.
Psychiatrist.
Yes, this one. And they're even more expensive.
Yeah.
And the waiting period is so long. It's like 2-3 months.
Yeah.
And I just, that's too long for me right now. But we do have this amazing now, it's called Hedepi or something, and they do online therapies, and now they added psychotherapists. No, psychiatrists, that's what it is. But it's 3,000 crowns for a session for an hour.
Gosh.
Which is a little over £100.
Yeah.
150 euros or something like that, 120. So that's a lot of money. That I cannot have just a gift for an hour of one session, and I presume that will not just take 1 hour to get that.
And also, like, I don't know about you, but for me, I don't feel like the tools that most therapists and psychiatrists have would really apply to me. Like, every time I've tried to seek help for anxiety, they've put me straight on CBT, and like changing my thoughts isn't enough because there's a lot more going on in my brain than just a few negative thoughts. Like, my whole body is reactive to like every emotion. And a lot of professionals aren't trained. They're trained for like a neurotypical brain. They're not like equipped to deal with more than that.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, everyone's ADHD and autistic now. And I think a lot of that is because in lockdown, we all like grew accustomed to a life where there was less pressure. Even though it was a really awful time, we didn't have to leave the house and like mask like metaphorically, not physically. And I think once you get into that, it's hard to get out of it. Like, with every education stage in this country, you get kind of less hours in the classroom. So by college, when I was getting free periods, I started wanting more time to myself. And like, by the time I'd finished university, I barely went to lectures and stuff.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm not even meeting up with friends because I just always... I'm like a self-time goblin. I want to gobble up all of my own spare time and not give it to anyone else.
I get it. I work 8 hours a day throughout the week, sometimes a little more when I have a longer break. So when it comes to the weekend, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to see anyone. And especially because, like, if I go out for a coffee at 2 to 4, to me, that's entire day.
Yeah,
that's just gone the entire day, and then I have just 1 out of 2, and that's so little.
Because of course, like, a big symptom of ADHD is executive dysfunction, and so like a lot of that neurodivergent time before plans is spent just being completely paralyzed because you know you have to do something later. And also, if it impacts your energy as well, then you need to like save every bit of energy you have until you have to leave the house. And it's like the whole day is such a lot of work. It's awful.
Yeah, it's funny when I'm coming home from work, especially when I'm like at the office in the afternoon, so I come home around 6. And when I'm coming from the tram up to the house, I'm already like feeling, I struggle just walking up. I feel like leaving my energy on the street, and like my legs grow heavy, and it's so weird.
I get the same thing like on Friday. Because I've been like so overrun with work, just every evening, like as soon as I close my laptop, I'm just stuck on the couch for ages. Mm-hmm. And like I need to just like disassociate for a few hours because I've been existing for too long. It's really, really hard work. And I feel like since I realize that I'm autistic, I notice it more. And I don't know if it's a good thing because like now that I'm more attuned to it, I feel it harder. So on the one hand, like I know why it's happening and that's a relief, but on the other hand, I'm so aware of it and it's painful.
What's some of the best rap you've seen?
I haven't seen that much. I need to like start seeing if I can find some more. I guess it would be Chloe Lee's, what's it called?
Two Wrongs Make a Right.
Yeah, Two Wrongs Make a Right. I feel like because it's a rom-com, it doesn't scratch the surface of like what I feel, but as rep on the whole, like it pretty much gets a lot of the symptoms of autism.
Her Bergman Brothers series, in each relationship, like each sibling has either ADHD or autism or something else. So a third, secret third option. So and it's so good to see also different types of everything. So like it's so nice to see it, if you put the entire family, like how they compare and don't, and it makes it so fresh and so fun and just so loving because they all love each other so much, and then they get their own love story, and it made my heart very soft.
Yeah, it's nice. I think that's one of the important things about rep, especially in the romance genre, that like people like us can still have their little happy love story, because I don't know, for me at the minute it feels pretty impossible, so it's really the only like chance I get to read other people's. I also really liked the autistic doctor in Grey's. She wasn't there for very long.
Yeah.
The cardio.
Oh yeah.
Surgeon. She had like a little meltdown, and then Christina and another doctor, like she was like, hug me, and they hugged her. And it was just like another simple thing, and probably a big underdeveloped representation for the time that it was like aired. But it was nice all the same. Because a lot of people think autistic people just don't like to be touched.
Yeah. That actually, I'm going to once again mention Rosalie Niles. Because even though it's not like officially set in the show, Maura Eilis is very clearly autistic.
Yeah.
And one of the things is when she is going through some big emotions, especially like the negative ones, she doesn't like to be touched. And she mentions it every time, like when she meets her biological mom, she comes to see her when she's very emotional, and she tries to hug her, and she's like, I don't like to be hugged when I'm like emotional. And it's all these little things, and you don't, I watched the show many times throughout the years, and only now when I also know what autism really is and what are the symptoms, like it's kind of clear, and it's very nice to see it, especially with like Jane, who is so sarcastic, and also I don't know if she's ADHD. I'd like to think so, just because I like to self-insert. But it's just, again, like, Maura's autism is always, she's understanding, like, of course, it's sometimes the butt of the joke, but it never, not in malicious way.
Yeah.
Like, Maura doesn't like to guess. That's one of her things. Like, she's very literal, and she doesn't like to take guesses when it comes to even, like, blood. She always calls it, like, brown reddish stain. So they make fun of that, sort of, but never in, like, a mean, malicious way.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Aw. I might have to watch it soon.
I think so, too, because I also want to rewatch it again, even though I did just in April, but I am who I am.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of more rep, but there is shockingly little. Final offer at the minute, Cal is diagnosed ADHD, and, like, he's struggling with addiction. And I think that's important as well.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, Lauren Asher doesn't do too badly with representation. In the first book, she had her sister had Down syndrome, and like there's a lot of trauma there that she does pretty well with. And that's another thing as well, like childhood trauma also links a lot to autism, to the point where they're sometimes misdiagnosed,
mm-hmm.
which is another thing people don't realize, because again, like, neurodivergence has been made such a clinical thing that people don't actually see neurodivergent brains as brains. Like, they just mm-hmm. see it as like a set of inconvenient behaviors. It's interesting. If anybody has any recommendations, please do let us know, because I'd like more.
I also think, oh my god, Lizzie Huxley Jones.
Yes.
Has a whole ass list on their website of.
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
And in Make You Mine This Christmas, yes. We talked about this with them. The main character is undiagnosed autistic and with dyspraxia as well, which is like motor problems. And they said then that they can kind of tell if an author is undiagnosed neurodivergent. And like, I'm starting to realize that now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how do you notice like the difference between neurodivergent authors and characters and neurotypical ones when you're reading or watching or whatever? Do you think it impacts the story?
I think you can, it's easier for me to tell when it comes to like shows, because then it's obvious based on the choices the actor makes, the script and stuff like that. With books, I honestly cannot tell most of the time. I think I can tell with ADHD a little bit, because I feel like in the romance books, especially like the guy, especially when he's like sort of the fun one, that sort of a fuckboy with a lot of very hyper energy, they're usually a little bit of ADHD there sometimes. And
yeah.
Also, L. Kennedy was like Dean. I feel like he was ADHD. He also had a lot of addiction. So
yeah.
I think there is sort of this kind of blueprint for ADHD guy in a romance.
Mm.
In show, you can just tell.
And that's so normalized, again,
yeah.
because, like,
yeah.
it's just assumed that men are more likely to show those traits, to the point where they don't even need to be, like, diagnosed and registered as that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. it's such a normal thing to expect from a man. For me, like, when reading, I was talking about it on like the Discord server. Sometimes with neurotypical authors, I don't necessarily feel like I'm in their brain, or that I like completely always understand the actions behind like the characters' things, because there are so many feelings involved in being neurodivergent. I feel like they're often focused on more. A lot of neurotypical books are just like, I did this and then I did that, and that kind of sucked, and then there was this. But like, I feel like there's a lot more time to explore, and not more time, but like more focus on like the inner workings of somebody when they're neurodivergent. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, for instance, with Chloe Liez, like, she spent a lot of time explaining why that character did what she did and why she acted like that and how autism impacted her life. But like with Catherine Center, for example, like, she's just like, this woman goes on a hike because she had a shit divorce. And it was a very simple, like,
mm-hmm.
character arc, character development. Whereas as an author as well, I struggle with character in that way, because I was assumedly writing neurotypical characters, and now I go back to them and none of them are neurotypical at all, because I can't get into a neurotypical brain.
Yeah.
Because I'm not. It's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very strange. And people like pointed out how the miscommunication trope is sometimes more like understandable from a neurodivergent point of view, because like, we do have trouble communicating. And that's one thing for me, like, I think I'm more lenient with it, and I do write it a lot as well, because when it's petty, it's annoying. Like, when it's just that they listen to someone behind a door and then just assumed, that's annoying, because they should have asked for clarification.
There is,
but if
there is miscommunication and miscommunication.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel, yeah, I don't know. I feel like the miscommunication of like not understanding body language or somebody else's actions and stuff like that, that's a lot more like relatable to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it.
That's why I love that enemies to lovers when he's in love, but she thinks he hates her. That's such a banger. I will always love it.
Mr. Darcy invented that trope. My autistic king. He is the most autistic man ever known. Yeah, he invented that. Like, just when they're so moody and, like, so unable to, like, act on their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just, like, a blank slate. And she's like, why are you so horrible and hostile? And he's like, actually, Mom, I'm in love with you.
I love it.
Good. Yeah. And so autistic. And that's just inherently autistic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I worry that, like, my writing won't resonate with people now because, and I think that's why, like, some people leave bad reviews and stuff, because my emotions don't reflect their emotions, because my emotions are felt a lot differently than a neurotypical person's.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know if that's a thing, but that's how it feels sometimes. And I do feel like the pairing of autistic and ADHD always go well together in like a romance.
I mean, yeah.
Or in real life. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like it's like yin and yang. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. Maybe, like, we balance each other out.
Mm.
But because I wrote a similar dynamic in The Highland Baby. And Paige is, like, hyperactive ADHD. She's always flitting from one thing to another. Whereas Jem is, like, very in her own head and, like, subdued and says it how it is. And it just, it's like sunshine times grump. But, like, to the extreme, I feel like. That's not how it works with us. I wouldn't say you're sunshine. You're my sunshine. But from an objective point of view, you're not that sunshine.
No. I agree with that statement. It's a weird thing because I get very excited about stuff, but usually I'm very, like, pessimistic. And I like my gloomy and rainy weather. And the darker, the better. But then again, I get coffee and I get a little bit of chocolate and I'm so hyper, I feel like my brain is about to explode. And then the sugar rush comes and I'm the most exhausted person ever.
Maybe there could be something to be said about that, because, like, we can be both depending on the circumstances. Like, we are not, like, a monolith. Like, for me, I wouldn't call myself a sunshine either. I would say, like, generally I'm a little more positive than you, if that's fair to say.
It's more than fair to say, yeah.
But I can also be a very depressed bitch and hate everything and everyone, and I don't know if that's, like, just part of the experience.
We're just multidimensional people.
Yeah,
we're just, our character arcs is unmatched.
And, like, that's the thing, like, our brain searches for dopamine. So when we're invested in something, when we're passionate about something, that's when we, like, really brighten up. That's what special interests and hyperfixations are for.
Yeah.
That's what Eddie Munson is for.
I was just recently at work saying, like, how you can always tell when I had coffee nor sugar without me even saying a thing. And it's so funny. And I'm like a toddler with it. And I don't know any other person who has the same thing, though.
No, I used to get it when I was a teenager, but I can't say I've had it much since then.
Yeah. So we have some listener questions.
Yay.
Do you connect particular songs with your own books / characters? And I don't mean music and background while writing.
Wait, can you say it again? My brain switched off. Speaking of neurodivergence.
Do you connect particular songs with your own books / characters? And I don't mean music and background while writing.
I do. I put together a playlist of, like, every every song that I think matches the vibe. Like, I kind of imagine it, if the book was a movie, what songs would be in the soundtrack?
Yeah.
A big one for me for Honeymoon, for one, was It Must Have Been Love, the cover by Maria Mena. But yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of the process, actually, like putting together all the songs I think of and stuff. Yeah. How about you?
I don't think so, because the thing is, I do put on a playlist with like instrumental music to fit the vibe of what I'm writing and the mood of it. So like that to me is sort of it.
Yeah.
It's two things in one. It's both the background music and the one connected to it.
Yeah.
And because in general, I don't listen to much of like actual songs.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
No, you're
a weird thing I came to realize.
It is pretty strange. Like, yeah. Because I can't send you songs and stuff because I know you won't really care about them because you're a big instrumental girly.
Yeah. It wasn't like it. Like, I used to be able to listen to the songs while reading, but I don't have brain capacity to do that these days.
Oh, no. So I can't listen. I don't listen to anything while I'm writing or reading. And if I am, it's very low instrumental.
Yeah, I need the instrumental for me to be able to, like, yes, that's the vibe. Yeah. And also to tune out the world outside.
Yeah.
And I feel like because to me, the priorities are like books and shows and games, I don't have space or time for like actual like songs.
Yeah.
Only sometimes when I travel, and even that is soundtrack. Like, I keep listening to the Stray God soundtrack when I'm outside. Mm. And it's really difficult for me not to sing it out loud because I'm used to scream it at home.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I guess that answers the question of why I'm always the one singing to you.
Yeah, I don't know any of the songs. I hear more songs from you than Spotify, man.
Yeah, I always have a song in my head, like, always. And I really like, I think it's, like, part of a stim for me. Like, I love singing and I love, like, I get really, really intensely, like, lost in some songs for a while. Like, when I listen to them, my whole body has a reaction, and I think that's a very much like autistic thing. And I had it when I used to go to concerts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I perform concerts in the shower, and sometimes before I go to sleep, I just love listening to music. Mm-hmm. But yeah, writing wise, I forgot what we were talking about. Writing wise, I listen to the playlist before I start writing, and then I have to turn it off.
Did you write a scene that made you cry while writing it?
I think I cry when I finish all my books because I always have a little bit of angst in there, and that makes me upset, but also in a good way. And then like I love writing the little reunion, and that's when the book feels most special to me, like when everything is fixed and the happy ever after is on its way. Mm. And I do think I always have a little.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. With like the big emotional scenes, because I always self-insert and I kind of like have to sort of like act it out a little bit for me to be able to describe like the feelings and all the everything. So yeah, it's not unusual for me, but to be fair, it's not unusual for me to cry at anything.
No, so... no, too. Same. Yeah.
Yeah. When do you find yourself writing the most? Angry, happy, sad, or insert another emotion?
It's my job now, so like I just write. It doesn't matter what I'm really feeling. But I think when I most want to write, like when I really get that urge, is when I've had a bit of time to like recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also like a little bit subdued for some reason, and I'm imagining a lot of angst because I love my angst. Mm-hmm. So like probably the angst is the first thing that always comes when I start planning a book. So probably sad.
Funny enough, I feel like I've always had the mood to write the most when I'm like emotionally the most devastated and like on my lowest.
Yeah, like, I get that.
In April, I ended with my work like in a horrible way, and I came home crying to you, and I wrote two books in the meanwhile.
So,
yeah.
It makes sense though, because like a lot of books is feeling. So like if you have a lot of feeling to put somewhere, it's a good place to put it.
Yeah.
I felt that especially because I wrote with the Highland Baby, like, Jem was the most personal character I've ever written. So I put a lot of, like, my own stuff into her, with, like, chronic illness and she's not diagnosed. Like, I never put it on the page, but she's definitely autistic. And, like, how, like, her anxiety, like, is triggered by, like, plans and stuff like that. And, yeah, I think feeling a lot helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or even just, like, if you've watched a really high-stakes or angsty scene on a show or a film, mm-hmm. that makes me want to write as well.
Yeah, every time I see some epic movie, and I'm going to say, especially with Marvel, first of all, I get always so much inspiration from these movies. Or, like, when I saw Dark Phoenix with, you know, X-Men movies, that's when I started writing my Phoenix fantasy. Yeah. I always get so much inspiration, and I'm so pumped up, like, because I experience a lot of emotions during the movies, especially, like, that sort of epic emotions. So I'm always excited to start writing that thingy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, my thing is not always necessarily emotions, but also vibes. Like, if we've watched Pirates of the Caribbean, I want to write pirates.
Every single time.
If it's, like, moody and rainy outside, I want to start getting ready for, like, Halloween spooky season.
I want to rewatch Pirates of the Caribbean so much, but I know that I will continue with my pirate suffix, and I don't have the time or energy to invest into it, so I'm postponing it.
I get it. I really do.
Because I know it will trigger it. So I'm like, when there will be time, I will get to it.
Yeah.
I want to know, what class would you main in D&D? I'm going to read you the classes. So.
Yeah, I don't know them.
I got it ready. Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember all of them, but yeah. Barbarian, who is a fierce warrior who can enter a battle rage, and his primary ability is strength. Bard, who is an inspiring magician whose power echoes the music of creation, and primary ability is charisma. Cleric, a priestly champion who wields divine magic in service of higher power, whose primary ability is wisdom. Druid, a priest of the old faith, wielding the powers of nature and adopting animal forms, whose primary ability is wisdom. Fighter, a master of martial combat, skilled with a variety of weapons and armor, whose primary ability is strength or dexterity. Monk, a master of martial arts, harnessing the power of the body in pursuit of physical and spiritual perfection, whose primary ability is dexterity and wisdom. Paladin, a holy warrior bound to a sacred oath, whose primary ability is strength and charisma. Ranger, a warrior who combats threats on the edges of civilization, primary ability, dexterity, and wisdom. Rogue, a scoundrel who uses stealth and trickery to overcome obstacles and enemies, primary ability, dexterity. Sorcerer, a spellcaster who draws on inherent magic from gift or bloodline, primary ability, charisma. Warlock, a weirdo of magic that is derived from a bargain with an extra planar entity, primary ability, charisma. And wizard, a scholarly magic user capable of manipulating the structure of reality, primary ability, intelligence.
I think mine would have to be a druid.
I was thinking a bard, because you can give bardic inspiration when you sing a song. And that felt very on point for you.
You know what? Yeah.
But as a druid, you can talk to animals in your
head. I know. The animals got me.
I get it. I get it. Yes. I think I would like to be a rogue, because I would like to pretend I'm alien a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that.
But also, a wizard speaks to me for my Scarlet.
Yeah.
Wizard. So I'm really... The thing is, when I was building my character in Baldur's Gate, now I was like, I'm about the vibes and the aesthetic. I don't care about what it can give me, which I don't feel like is a smart way to play the game. But I want the easy one. I don't have roles, you know, so I don't need all that. So I'm good.
Yeah, I have the same thing with Skyrim. I'm quite, like, interested to start playing again as a different species or whatever it is. Well, thank you.
Well, I'm going to add one more thing, speaking of D&D. Okay. I was just so excited last night when we were watching the movie that I recognized all the names of the places, like Waterdeep and Neverwinter and Baldur's Gate. It made me so excited. And also, like, when I'm listening to the Dungeons and Daddies podcast, they're also, like, in Faerun, so I'm knowing all the names, and it makes me very happy.
I love it. You know what's so fucking weird? Neither of us have ever played D&D, but we still feel this strong connection to it. You through Dungeons and Daddies and all that, and me through Eddie Munson.
Yeah, I did play it, though.
Oh, you did?
I did, in my elementary school. It was, like, very dumbed down for kids. But I was, for a whole year, once every 2 weeks, we had, like, a D&D. One of our teachers did it like after school as an extra thing, which was very nice of him. So I did play it, and I miss it. It's fun.
So what one was you in that one?
I don't remember. It's 15 years ago, man. It's horrible to say it, but it's also like it's 15 years ago.
So. Yeah, we're getting old, man.
It's horrible. So I don't remember. But I would say I did chose someone just for the vibes and aesthetic, not actually.
Of course.
Yeah. But I want to play it so much. I do.
I don't want to play it so much as I want Eddie Munson to be my dungeon master.
Yeah.
I find it really hot when men in particular get super duper geeky and super into Dungeons and Dragons, and I don't know why.
Yeah. The thing is, like, it's either Eddie Munson type of a man, or that man who gets upset that in Baldur's Gate, like, male and non-playable characters are hitting on them. So, like, it's two type of nerds.
Yeah, you have to just beware of the incels.
Yeah.
But I just know I'd be the type of person who got lost really quickly, because especially with odd, if it's not written down in front of me, like, I don't know if you know this about me, but I struggle with auditory processing. It's I know. It's crazy. It's not like I definitely tuned out as soon as I heard the word druid for a good 5 minutes.
Honestly, I was certain, especially if your battery was out, I knew I lost you.
I was like, I need to go and get my charger, but
I know.
Yeah, so yeah. I feel like I would get very lost very quickly with all the rules of the game and whatnot, so somebody would have to be there to tell me everything.
Yeah, well, that's the Dungeon Master is for.
Okay, but he would get really annoyed with me.
It depends on who. Like, in Dungeons and Daddies, they don't necessarily know how to play it. Like, I know that they're mentioned several times that they're getting messages that they're not playing actual Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
But it's fun nonetheless. Yeah. And they're trying to figure out together throughout the podcast. So
yeah, I think I would need somebody patient, definitely.
I did found a Discord called Dungeons and Darlings. And they are it's all girlies, I feel like. And it's for also like the people who wants to start playing Dungeons and Dragons and are a little shy because it's a role-playing game.
The Stranger Things casted, like, a real Dungeons & Dragons game. And the Dungeon Master was super-duper intense. And I'd be quite scared if one of them looked at me and started doing the voices and stuff in real life. So I don't know. I guess we would have to try.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely would like to try, but I would be quite nervous about it.
Yeah, samesies. I know it would be more comfortable to do it with people you know, because we do voices all the time. We do role-playing all the time with the most stupid shit you can come up with.
We do. Yeah, that's once very true.
Once we were for an hour, we were on the phone, on our actual feet.
Making feet puns.
Yeah. For like a good hour, I would say.
Yeah. But that just shows how flexible our hips are. Like, mid-20s, you're approaching mid-20s, I'm just about to pass it. We can still be on the phone with our feet.
Yeah. And we're single. How is it possible?
How is it possible? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. We're so flexible.
Thank you for the listener questions. We have a Discord where you can put those if you want to join. It's on our link tree.
We're a few people away from 100, actually, which is very exciting.
Are we?
I think we're around 80 now. Let me
That's
check.
That's amazing. It's been really fun recently. Like, we're having really good time with everybody. And we have just normal chats, writing sprints. We talk about everything we love there, like we do here.
Now you do sprints daily, which is great.
Yeah, we're doing sprints pretty much daily because I work all week as a writer. So I'm always there to sprint. So, and we want to set up like a little movie night every maybe once a month or twice a month where we all pick a film together and watch it together. So if you'd be interested, we're just trying to grow a little bit and we really like talking to everybody and stuff. And it's a good place to promote your books as well.
Yeah.
And then
readers and any advice needed.
Yeah. Yep. Ivy has a marketing tips channel there where she can help you out, and you can look for ARC readers and beta readers and all sorts. It's a good place to be, if I do say so myself.
I agree.
And we have two forms open at the minute. One where you can let us know about any upcoming releases for our monthly release list. And another, if you want to be on our guest. If you want to be on our blog as a guest.
Yeah.
Either a guest article or an interview. We just recently posted one with Stuart Tudor, who writes horror for... I've talked too much and it's
we're
over.
At the end. You can finish. We're in the finish line. Go for it. I believe
horror
in you.
Books, horror stories. And we find out more about him. And there's lots more to come. I've been trying to schedule people and failing because dates don't date in my brain. I don't understand numbers. But yeah. Hopefully most Fridays we'll give you some content. It will be great. Yeah.
I can't stop looking at my Wanda ring. I'm going to say it.
I get it.
The entire time it's flashing here and I keep watching it. Those people on YouTube will see. I'm going to show it to you because that's how I spent my monthly money this month.
Yeah, as she should.
And it's flashing here and I kept watching it. Anyway, yeah, I got distracted. I don't know why.
No, that never happened.
Well, what? And I guess we must remember,
support women's rights,
but most importantly, support women's wrongs,
especially if they're autistic or ADHD as fuck.
Fuck yeah. And until next time, we shall see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile. Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.